Time for another update. The main news that I have is the story that I spent a week working on for the Raconteur anthology. Got rejected, and that's fine. I guess the main thing that I am a little frustrated about with it is I spent a week working on it, which is time that I could have spent working on something else. It's got me reconsidering a lot of my kind of thoughts for the year. Like I wanted to write more short stories, but when I look at how much time it actually takes me to write a short story, that's time I really should be using on the things that, like, I know will be published. I know will potentially make some income. One of my goals this year is I would like to make more income at my writing. So I will probably not be writing as many short stories. Or if I do, they'll be flash fiction or something like that. I do still want to get the stories that I've written into a rotation so I can try and get them published somewhere, because that's the thing that I've been pretty bad at. Unless I'm writing a story specifically for an anthology or something where I was asked to write the story, I tend to write them and then they just sit on my hard drive. So I need to put those stories to work. Turning off my heater because it's too hot. I had thoughts about rejection, and I might do maybe a show on rejection and how I kind of deal with it. But honestly, I think I was more frustrated with the time that I put into this and thinking that I had, like, all the feedback I got in the story was really good. But sometimes it doesn't matter if the story is good or not. If it doesn't fit the anthology, then it's not a good fit. Move on. So, all right. Things I've been focused on this week are primarily writing the outline for, right now the working title is Advanced by Fire on the next Grimm's War book. I'm still waiting on feedback from Mallory on Lyssa's Vengeance. So that one is in the back of my mind, but I'm not going to start writing the outline until we've had a chance to talk about where the next book should go exactly. And she's had a chance to read the current book and give me any thoughts or changes that need to be made. But Jeff and I already talked about what the next book could have. And so I'm really focused on writing as detailed an outline as I possibly can, because one of the things that really held me up with the last book was just not being sure where to go at any given time. So I've already written about 5,000 words. And the only thing I'm a little uncertain about is word counts. I need to take what I've written and break it down into chapters. Because right now I'm just writing a summary, which is a thing I typically don't do. I usually would start with like 50 chapters and then start filling in what I think should happen in each chapter. This time I'm doing much more of a narrative, which is something I haven't done before. So we'll see how that goes. I really plan to get that wrapped up today or tomorrow, because I need to start writing and getting word count started this week. The book needs to be about 100,000 words, and I would really like to have it done within a month and a half to 2 months. That might be really aggressive, but that's putting us into February. And if I'm going to also be working on Lyssa's Vengeance, or I'm sorry, probably Lyssa's Betrayal, I think is the next book, then I need to get going. I would really like to have something published by June of this year. We'll see. I am also finishing up my grad school application, and that has been a lot harder to write than I thought it would be. You know, you read these examples online and they just, maybe part of it is that I'm just in a different place in my career and my goals in pursuing a graduate degree in writing are kind of different. Like I guess I don't feel like I need to be taught how to finish something, because I've done that and I've given critiques and received critiques. Like, I would like to learn more about how different people approach writing, like people that are more on the academic side, with the goal of teaching eventually. But also, I could probably teach in other ways as well. So I don't know. I wrote something that I felt was like very much just a timeline of where I've been and what I've done. And that was already over 1,000 words. And it's only supposed to be about 700 words. And it also just felt very dry. Like, I did this, I did this, I did this. This is who I am as a function of the things I've done. And that's also something that I don't know that I like very much about it. I don't like putting myself into sort of categories about my identity. Because I am certain things, I suppose, and those things do affect what I write. But I don't know that I like to be defined that way, or I'm just not used to writing it down as, I am this. I look at the world in this way. I am a disabled veteran. I am a first-generation student. I am, you know, I grew up in a logging town that transitioned out of logging. I lived in Europe. I don't know, just I started a small business that didn't go where I wanted it to. But it becomes a lot, you know. I'm not 20, so I'm writing something different maybe than a person who is just coming out of undergrad. And trying to do that in a way that is succinct, and then what's the point, right? That's also, how am I integrating this stuff and things that I write? That's probably what I need to focus on. It's just been kind of a block. I've tried to do it several times. Something I've been trying to do a lot more of, and I do this when, like, I take my daughter to the library every Wednesday, and while she's going around looking at books, I'll typically sit down and try to draft something. And so that gives me pretty much, like, you have a half hour to get this done, draft it. And so that's what I've done several times with this essay, and I have probably three different versions of it now, and I'm not happy with any of them. But the friend that's helping me out with reviewing all of this, like, I need to get him the materials. And I'm pretty sure I have the stories that I want to send, but this thing is kind of hemming me up. I need to get it done. So that is a goal over the next few weeks, to really at least have a draft that is most of what I want this thing to say. And then we'll go from there. So that's the thing that I'll be working on across the next week. I finished 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea I guess it was Sunday. I have a lot of thoughts about that book. Also, it's always interesting to me to read about authors in different times and imagine that, you know, Jules Verne was writing during the time of the U.S. Civil War. He was writing, you know, some 70 years before World War II. Actually, sorry, even farther than that, 90 years. Imagining these people's lives and the things that the way they saw the world. And when we look back and we know what's coming, it's something I spend time thinking about. That he has so much optimism. And I think we would probably call it techno-optimism today. And Nemo in this book is probably the equivalent of a billionaire. But the way that he approaches technical problems and describing things using the technology they have of the day is very much hard science fiction and trying to establish rules about a thing and then living within that world. The book itself, like, I don't want to say the story has problems, because I think it's probably pretty typical of what you would have read during that day. It was also written to be serialized. So there was, I think he was definitely writing for a specific type of market. But basically what this has done for me is it's opened up, like, I want to read more Jules Verne. I would like to read more things from that time period. And so I already kind of got sucked into, he has another book called The Adventures of Captain Hatteras, which is about traveling to the North Pole. And the opening of the book is all about how, describing how they built the icebreaker, essentially, that's going to be the Forward is the name of the ship that will be traveling. And the people watching it be built, like, Verne did this in 20,000 Leagues as well. Like, he'll move outside the character to show something else that's happening. Like, you know, in that case, how the Nautilus was built, in this case, how the Ford was built. And so really laying down expectations around the technology and what it's going to do in the story. So I'm kind of gathering my thoughts on that, and then I will probably do some kind of review of it. I have most of my thoughts put together for the essay or whatever I want to do about content versus writing. And recent changes in Amazon are even pushing more of that. If you're not aware, Amazon rolled out a feature where it's going to be like Rufus, which was their AI feature to help you shop, but it will be in books in Kindle Unlimited or on the Kindle platform, I think. So anything that's on Amazon will be fed into their AI. I haven't seen more information about how an author could opt out of it. The thing is, they were already doing this. I'm really surprised that Amazon just hasn't rolled out their own AI product, or are probably licensing their database in some way to OpenAI. Like, it just hasn't come out yet, but I'm sure they're doing that because they're sitting on so much data. And that's why, like, anytime authors get up in a, tizzy about, well, what if Kindle goes away? Well, they don't make enough money at Kindle. Kindle is such a huge data generator for them. Like, everything about the Kindle platform generates data for them about user behavior, about stories, about what people read, what they don't read, how fast they read it. It's like the gift that keeps on giving for them. So I could see them, it's not a loss leader for them as well. Like, it makes money. So I could see them just letting that go in perpetuity, just as a way to generate data. And if we want to get really dystopian about it, that we're all just data generators for the AI, like, we should be paid for that. We're not. But I don't see that going away. I just see it being used in different ways, and this is the most recent way to get it rolled out. I am kind of curious about how readers would use it. Like, I think about how I'm using AI to query, like, basically create a world book around my series, and even use it to do quick, what were the descriptions of this character? Like, because I'm outlining, I'm using it to go back and look at notes, like things where I would have had to go through a manuscript or use Control F in a document. Like, it can just do it for me right there. It's great for finding discrepancies. So I see it as a win there. One thing I thought was really funny in researching more about Jules Verne's life was people were complaining about typos even back then. So they all the different versions. No, this came from, I was reading the translator's notes on Captain Hatteras, and he was talking about, his name's William Butcher, and he's done most of the most recent translations of Jules Verne's work. And he was talking about different versions of it and how he was comparing across, multiple versions of how something had been published. And it was hard to do a translation in some cases because there were typos. And so we couldn't tell exactly what was meant to be written when he's finding mistakes all over the place, which sounds just like what we're going through today, right? Like, I don't even know when the golden age of no typos was. The thing I want right now is for AI to find missed words for me. I'm really surprised that none of them seem to do that. I went down the rabbit hole one day trying to figure out how to make Pro Writing Aid find missing words. And the only way it seems to even approach it is if you do a grammar search and then just go, bit by bit. Because it's supposed to be reading context, but I think this gets to the problem again with AI. Like, it does not understand context. Like, it could break down a sentence mathematically. It understands rules of grammar. It might understand, like, length of sentence versus short sentence versus type of language used and how that creates heat maps in a story. But I just don't see it understanding context. And maybe I'm just ignorant about this. I know that they're certainly trying to sell this feature, but anytime, at least with Pro Writing Aid, I have tried to use their critique feature, it's just garbage. It's completely unusable. And for long form work or anything with any bit of subtlety, it's just useless. And increasingly, I think the writing styles that AI will push us towards, the way that it's trying to rewrite all of our email and summarize everything, and even the incentives with something like Kindle Unlimited, where, it used to be when I was coming up, and this kind of gets to my content versus writing thoughts. When I was coming up, words were very precious. You were paid by the word. For a lot of magazines today, you're paid by the word. So words must convey as much meaning as possible in as few words as possible. Well, the world we live in now has reversed incentives. Kindle pays you by the page read. So the more page reads you can get, the more money you get paid. If you're writing for Royal Road or you're writing serialized fiction, people want the work as they want the story as fast as they can get it, and they don't want it to be short. They want to be immersed in it as long as they can. And I think you may reach a point where typos and mistakes and things like that become a signal that a human wrote it, which will be valuable when everything is, potentially there's like just a layer of slop that some people may be reading for free, or it'll be, driven by advertising or something like that. but it will never have mistakes. That's something I've also been thinking about. Like, the AI won't make the same mistakes that humans do. It also won't be as interesting. Like, there's a difference between a live music performance and listening to an artist do something acoustically or on a different instrument or slightly different than the way they might do it in a studio, than watching it live, where they might, their voice might break, or they might stop and say something, or, you know, there's just so many pieces there that make a live performance more meaningful, more of an experience. And I think that writing is going to move that way. It's already there, really. And so while we can't get away from AI, I think scraping what we're doing and trying to add it to its database, us being human is still going to make it valuable. I'm kind of off on a real tangent here, but that's something that I've been thinking quite a bit about. A lot of the worry about AI, I just think that ship has sailed. But how do we continue to, like, exist as writers and creators in this world? I had not thought about that point before, that AI will not make mistakes. I wonder if professors editing essays notice that. Like, they're all looking for the way AI says things, but AI doesn't miss words. It doesn't misuse words, as far as I've seen. It just uses really bland and boring and repetitive word, you know, sentence structure. And also, you can tell it doesn't understand metaphor or similes, or it'll use phrases that are just not the right phrase for what it's supposedly trying to communicate. And so you, as the human, or at least me as the writer, has to go back and be like, no, don't do that. Okay, what else? That's the main thing I'm focused on this week. I have not found a new thing to read. I've been reading a lot of comic books, honestly. I've been reading Department H by Matt Kent. I have been reading Lower Decks, the Star Trek comic, which I really... I've just been going down the rabbit hole on a lot of Star Trek stuff. I think that since I couldn't buy the Star Trek Lego, I've been trying to satisfy that itch with other Star Trek things. I watched the first couple episodes of Deep Space Nine, and that's been fun. My wife and I have been watching a BBC show called Game of Wool, which is kind of like the Great British Bake Off, but with knitters and crocheters doing fiber art stuff. And it's really cutthroat. You've got, like, they do a lot of stuff with the timing of it, because, you know, it takes you 12 hours to crochet or knit something. They have these grannies, though, that come out to review it afterwards. And they are just, they're very detail-oriented. They know kind of the whole breadth of fashion or how it relates to fiber arts. And then the person that they have is sort of the, I don't know what you'd even call him, the master of ceremonies or something. Like, he's just kind of cutthroat. Like, you know, who's being cast off today? And maybe it's just the language that they use that's slightly different. But, oh man, you're off the boat. you're gonna drown. And then I think it's super funny that the guy that's probably going to win is German, who's an immigrant to the UK. But every time he talks, he's just very specific about the things that he says. But he's also a guy that, he's in his 60s, I want to say, and lost his job during the pandemic, had to care for his father, and started knitting and crocheting because it was something he could do while he was caring for his father. And now it's really worked out for him, and he's very talented at it. I have always found fiber arts really fascinating. I mean, it's something that my dad, in the Boy Scouts, we did, you know, we would make all kinds of things. And so we'd make baskets. We sewed, like, there was one year that we made all of our own tents and shelter, you know, things out of canvas and tarps. And we used, you know, lashing. It's pretty hard to do lashing anymore because you can't, I mean, in Oregon, you could probably cut down enough wood to do it these days, but it's not a thing that you can do all over the place. But I find that stuff fascinating, and it's a very useful skill. I think anybody that says that crochet and knitting is not useful, you're stupid to me. Like, everybody needs socks, right? In a world where maybe you couldn't get socks, like, that person that can crochet you some, or knit you some socks, or crochet you a sweater, you're definitely going to value that person, especially if they can do it out of different materials. Like, one of the things they've done as well is they'll do alternate materials. And so this guy made a bag out of like, I'm pretty sure it was just plastic grocery bags, but it was very tightly knit. He used different stitches throughout it to aid the strength. All that stuff was very interesting. Like, watching people do that, to me, when you're trying to write a story and describe how someone is doing something, or how the words that are used to describe it, how people approach a problem to lay it out in kind of a systematic way, to me, that kind of gets to hard science fiction, right? Because you're trying to explain something that probably doesn't exist in our current world, but you're using language that exists today to try and get the idea across. And so watching people do things like that is really interesting to me. I don't know how anybody could watch this show away from the BBC. So it's probably frustrating to me for me to even talk about it. But if you get a chance, Game of Wool is a fun show to watch. If you like the British Bake Off, I think you would enjoy this show. It's as upbeat as that, but a little more cutthroat, and very different than, you know, American reality competition shows like this, where they play up the drama a lot. And this show is not really playing up the drama, which is something I like about British competition shows like this. Otherwise, heading into the holiday, and my daughter is super excited about Christmas. We're all experiencing it through her. All of our shopping is done at this point, and it's going to be time to get things wrapped up. My daughter is out of school, which means that I won't have, like, I can work from home during a lot of this time, but I'll be spending time with her. We've got her in some camps, so I'll have some time there to get things done. So I don't know how much work I'll really get finished. That's why I want to get these summaries, this outline, just really nailed down, so it's easy for me to get the words out when I have the time to get it done. Because one of the things I've just really learned is I'm not going to have time, as much time as I ever think I will. Same thing with making these videos. I was thinking, okay, I'm going to record this during my lunch break and go outside and do it, you know, not in the office, which could be a nice change. But yesterday it was raining all day, and work has a way of worming its way into everything that I want to do. So if I think I'll take my lunch at a certain time, or think I'll be in a certain headspace, that's not going to work out. So it's really better just to, if I want to do this, I have a certain amount of time in the morning to get it done, sit down, knock it out, and move on with the day, right? So after this, it's going to be time to get back to my outline. What else do I want to finish? I'm probably going to jump into a more contemporary book to read. I want to read Rick Partlow's new Accidental Astronaut. And then we'll see from there. I'll find something new to read, and I'll talk about that. I still have not gotten back to Shadows of Time. People keep saying they just loved it, and I'm not feeling, I don't know what it is. I'm sure the time will be right. But I mean, I will finish it eventually. I think that's everything. That's the end of my notes anyway. So I may read more Jules Verne. All right. Thanks for hanging out. And if you're working on anything this week or things you want to get done, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. So, all right. I'll talk to you later. Until next week. Bye.